Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Hello, and welcome to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser, and we're so happy to be broadcasting from the Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado. This is becoming an annual tradition. I am here in Grand Lake, Colorado, and just enjoying an incredible week in this magnificent state. Last night we were at Red Rocks hearing One Republic and Sarah Bareilles. We opened the program today with that One Republic song called It's a Good Life. And our guest today, Robert Castellino, has been leading the Good Life in Colorado for a number of years. And I had the pleasure of meeting him maybe 10 or 11 years ago. So we'll be talking with him. He's had an incredible life experience taking incredible photography of the Rocky Mountains, as well as other subjects in Colorado, in Denver. He has many, many books of, you know, the landscape, the nature, and I do want to make sure people check out his photography website, which is robertcastellino.com. But we'll be talking about his new business that he's doing now and all the things that he's bringing to help change the planet for the better. Just a couple of highlights from Colorado before we get into our interview with Bob. And can think about a visit here at some point because there's so much to do. There's ballooning. We went ballooning in Boulder on Wednesday. There's a wonderful restaurant up at Chautauqua, which is in the foothills in Boulder, southern Boulder, and you can eat out on the patio and porch and overlook the Flatirons, and I'm sure Bob has taken many pictures of the Flatirons. And got to soak over in Hot Sulphur Springs and the mineral springs there. And ironically, Raw Artist was taking place in Boulder last Sunday night, and rawartist.org is a website you should definitely check out. It's in 81 different cities, and I will be participating in the St. Louis event September 20th. So without further ado, Bob, are you with us today?
Yeah, good morning, Brenda. How are you?
Good morning, and thank you for calling in. I know you're about to start your Labor Day holiday weekend, and you're up at, are you near Wolf Pass, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm up at Wolf Creek Pass making photographs of the trees that are dying due to beetle kill and try to express what's going on with climate change here in Colorado.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second, because when I came last year, I was in shock. I had not expected to see so many trees gray and not the beautiful lush green carpet on the mountains. But it seems like it's more on the western slope than the eastern slope. What's your take on this whole beetle kill situation with the evergreen trees?
Yeah, there's two specific beetles that are affecting the Colorado forest. One is the spruce beetle, and the other is the pine beetle, which you see attack the lodgepole pines. The big issue is that during the winters, we do not have the cold snaps for 40 days or more any longer, where the temperatures get below zero consistently for a long enough period of time to exterminate the beetles. So they have been on a rampage, and the blight that you see in the forest, the brown out is, or the gray out, as you might see, where the fur and the needles on the trees are falling because the beetles attack the tree and take all the sap and nourishment and life right out of the trees. And this is endemic across not only Colorado, but much of the Rocky Mountain rest and into Canada.
Brenda?
Hello, Brenda?
It looks like the trees, it looks like the trees are coming back in parts of the Rocky Mountain National Park. And I was talking to a park ranger last year, and he said because they had a no-fire policy for so many years, the trees didn't go through their natural cycle of burning and then rejuvenating. Is that pretty much your analysis too?
Yeah, we have the tremendous fires occurring in Colorado because of the dry drought conditions, along with the beetle kill, which adds ladder fuels to the forest, which help build the tinder so that the fires can start and then move into the trees that are healthy. And the critical element is that it's part of the forest cycle, life cycle, to burn and to move on, and then the new trees and the new growth come along as they die out. But the longevity of the forests have been affected by the pine beetle. Now, it's only in very specific parts of the forest, not exclusively to the whole Rocky Mountains, but different parts and pockets and regions. So there's one particular pocket here in southern Colorado in the San Juan Mountains at Wolf Creek Pass that is extremely hit, as well as some in Summit County. But it's in very pockets, and it's very specific.
So, you know, that it must be heartbreaking for you because you've taken so many pictures of the Rocky Mountains and the forest, and you've captured them in an incredible way. I was going to say at the introduction of the program that you are to photography what Renoir is to painting, because your pictures are so majestic, and I know many people around the country and the world probably have one of your prints on their walls or one of your books. So what has it been like to, you know, go back to a location that you've photographed many, many times to see a very different composition?
Well, as you said, it makes me sad to see the change and how quick it's come upon us. But it's vital for us to understand, and you know, there's so many beautiful places in Colorado that this is just a part of it, and it hasn't affected the state entirely. But when you get to these places that have these magnificent landscapes with this beautiful foliage that dominates the mountain slopes and the high country, and it's turned to gray, and the trees are standing without their needles, and you know, they look like skeletons, and it's a harsh reality to accept. And it's also a little bit scary because so many homes have been built into so many of these beautiful places that and cities are being built close to these magnificent wild wildernesses that they're put in danger when these wildfires take place. So there's a combination of elements. One's the sadness, one's the concern for people, and the other is what can we do to make change so that we can preserve this beautiful place?
Well, fantastic. And now I want to first talk a little bit about your photography before we talk about the Climate Reality Leadership Program that you're involved with and all the ways you're helping to make change and inspire people to make change. How did you first get into photography? Were you a young boy when someone handed you your first camera?
Funny enough, my dad loved photography, but no, that wasn't the case at all. I was actually the vice president of marketing and operations for a skier in Oregon, and I had hired a photographer who worked for Geographic and for Audubon Society to create a multi-image slideshow to promote the ski area. And one day, I was she was up on the snowcat, and it was really cold, and I was very specific about what I was looking for in the scene with our skiers, with the backdrop of Diamond Peak in the background and the Cascades. And she was freezing, and she looked at me tersely and said, "Why don't you pick up the camera and shoot it yourself?" And I said, "Well, if I had some lessons and I owned one, I would." And she goes, I said, "Is yours for sale?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Does it come with lessons?" And she said, "Yes." And the next thing I knew, I had lessons and a camera.
So that's interesting. It was through one of your professional, more traditional type jobs in a corporate environment that you just took charge of the camera and started capturing what your mind's eye saw. But then it became a very, it's a very much of a technical challenge. I know I've heard you talk about waiting hours for the light to hit a certain way or a certain angle. Can you talk about that, the craftsmanship in designing the perfect photo?
Oh, yeah. There's a number of things that go into a great image and photograph. Clearly, having, especially in landscape photography or social statement photography or photojournalism, it's about composition. Mostly, there's five critical steps. One is to do the research of your location and subject so that you know it and understand the lighting. So it means going there and just making records and starting to understand what's influencing and what's affecting the situation and the drama that's there. The next thing is to set up and compose and to start to see through the lens and understanding your critical f-stops, your ISO, your white balance, and your shutter speed to get the exposure correct. And then finally, it's basically waiting for the drama to occur once you get the composition set up, understanding how you want to present the image that you're seeing through the lens to the recording device so that you can present it to your audience in such a way that it has the desired effect, an emotional effect, to connect them with the story behind the image. So it's critical. It's getting out there. It's doing the research. It's understanding the composition. It's understanding the exposure. And then hopefully you're going to get some dramatic lighting and some action with the subject that's going to create the drama that's going to drive the story.
Now, you mentioned the word drama and dramatic images several times, and I know being in the Rockies, especially near Trail Ridge Drive that I've been crossing over several times this week, we've crossed it late at night, and there's been herd of elk out at, you know, the wee hours and also at huge elevations. I just don't understand how they get up there at 14,000 feet, and all these elk are just, you know, grazing. But the moose and a bear, we saw a fox outside our cabin door running down the street the other day, and the neighbor told us there was a bull moose roaming the people's yards the other day. Have you been in any close encounters with wildlife?
Oh, yeah, a number of them. Rocky Mountain National Park, where you're at right now, is one of the more amazing national parks in the national park system, you know, founded by Enos Nils and people like John Muir back in the day for future generations to enjoy the wildlife and the wild landscape and to observe and to see it and visit it year in and year out. I have one particular experience with a bear on a river trip, river running on the Green River through Grays and Desolation Canyon out in Utah. And the ranger forewarned us, you know, there's a bear down at Flat Canyon, and the bear has actually been approaching river raptors during the day. Well, we were on a a long day. We didn't have a campsite, and we had to go to Flat Canyon. And I'm always interested in photographing wildlife. Well, we set up camp, and then we went for a hike, as we do as a tradition in the evening, and we came back, and a bear had entered one of our passengers' tent, and I had asked the passengers, we'll be providing your snacks and so forth for you. Well, she'd brought some Reese's Pieces and a honey bear jar, and that literally the bear was sitting outside the tent with the Reese's Pieces and the honey jar. And that was a little bit disarming, but we did get some photographs, and it was a funny moment that I'll never forget.
Wow. And you have to have nerves of steel to be out there for the many hours that you are. And, you know, but to be immersed in nature is a way to escape the rat race, to reconnect with Mother Earth, and to have that spiritual renewal. Have you found that being in nature is a way to be renewed, to renew your soul and to renew your purpose on this planet?
Oh, my God. Absolutely. You know, the most challenging times of my life have been healed by going out into nature during those transitions, and sometimes on long walks or backpacking alone or just making photographs. It's the connection and the sense of who you are relative to where you are. It gives you a feeling that you're a part of the whole as opposed to dissociated in your everyday life, just being too busy. It's a place of calm and renewal. It's, it gives you so much uplift and understanding about our place on the planet relative to all living creatures and the heavens and the earth. And it's just a vital part of being. And making photographs is an extension of that experience.
And so one of the things we talk on Alive to Thrive quite a bit about is reinventing oneself and going in new directions and pursuing one's dreams. And so you left the corporate environment to become a full-time photographer? Is there a gap in between there? How did you decide to leave that sort of steady paycheck and go out and be an entrepreneur?
Well, like everything in life, when you venture into something new, there's this whole sense of risk. And should I take on the challenge? Is it too big? Can I accomplish this? Can I become what I have as a dream and see my wishes and hopes become real? And I was working, and I had a job with a golden parachute, working for MCI Telecommunications for the rest of my life. But it was I wasn't as happy there. And so whenever I was out making photographs and showing the people at work, and went in to show a bookstore my images, I got positive feedback immediately about what this was, and it gave me encouragement. But it wasn't without challenge. So it was about getting out there and taking the risk and writing out good plans and getting support and creating an advisory board and finding people with experience that had the knowledge and information and wisdom to guide me through the challenges, to avoid the pitfalls, and in running the business side of becoming an artist, which is something so vital. So often everybody goes, well, I want to be an artist, or I want to be a photographer, I want to be an author. But there's also the other side of that, and that's the practical side of managing your business and understanding the steps and creating the structure that allows you the freedom to pursue your passion.
Fantastic. And that's pretty much brings us full circle from where you are now, from where you were to where you are now, and helping artists, business owners, authors, and entrepreneurs to launch their dream, whatever their dream is. And your new business is called iProject Launch, which is a great name, by the way. And your website, I know, is just recently up, iprojectlaunch.com. It is up, isn't it? It's live.
Well, it'll be up this week. It's in process.
Okay.
Thank you very much for promoting in advance. But it's in development. We should be up by next Wednesday. But
okay.
It's very exciting.
Great.
To take that
right
direction
after the holiday. Great. So right after the holiday, people can log on And what will be some of the resources there for them just to kind of get to know who you are? And will there be other resources there for them?
Sure. iProject Launch is developed out of a request from a number of people coming to me through the years asking for advice how to get started and how to get their how to help them with their vision and their dreams to become a reality. And through the years and through my own challenges and the mistakes and failures, I've learned a process that takes you through setting up your organization and your back office, then setting about your plan to how you're going to achieve your goals through a period of time, making sure that you have your finances and financing in place so that you will succeed, and then making sure that you have a very specific promotional publicity and sales strategy that you implement as you produce your product as well as produce your service or the vision in your art, whatever it is, so that those things are occurring simultaneously and that you give them the time and the breadth so that they can coalesce. And the sequence is really critical so that you don't get too far out ahead of yourself. Some people rush ahead and go, well, I want to just be there and I want to be famous. And sometimes it starts, you need to step back and think about doing an inside-out campaign where you start locally, you know, and you create a ripple effect that rolls out from you like a tsunami and reaches out across the country, as opposed to thinking that all of a sudden you're going to be a global entity. It takes very specific steps, and the idea is with iProject Launch is to help people reach their success by doing that in a fashion that, in manner that gives them the steps and the sequencing that's proper.
So what have been some of the lessons you've learned as an entrepreneur? You've had big wins, you've had big losses, and I think that's something that people in business, those that are successful, have all had big losses. I've known many people that have had bankruptcies or had financial challenges or the marketplace changed and the demand for their product or service dried up, and they had to change gears or reinvent themselves. So what have you seen in your experience that that is related to that, that you have to sort of regroup, reorganize, find your talents that the marketplace may need that isn't, you know, where's the gap, where's the pain? And so I think so often people that go into business, sometimes it doesn't work out the way they anticipate, and then they quit, throw in the towel, and just, you know, quit right there. But what I've seen with you, Bob, and why I admire you so much is that you are so persistent, consistent, and diligent that nothing will get in your way and nothing will stop you from pursuing. And it just is like this greater expansion. And you embrace, instead of dismiss, you embrace the challenges and incorporate them into your business, and now, you know, are able to help other business owners overcome some of those challenges. Can you talk a little bit about that, challenges you've had?
Sure. I can think of one specific challenge that forever changed the direction that I was going with my business. Robert Castellino Designs was a greeting card company and a calendar company. And on around 1995, it wasn't structured properly and financed properly. And I moved too fast, too quickly in getting the product out. And I didn't have the operating income from that business to sustain it and to recapitalize from the profits each year. So unfortunately, the business was financed through credit card and credit card debt, and I had to succumb to a bankruptcy. And I thought, that's it. I'll never go back to making greeting cards or calendars or publishing again. And I'd always had a dream about doing books. So I, you know, had to suck it up, and I went out into the winter and took a walk in the desert in Moab, Utah. And about 14 days later, I I came back home licking my wounds and my chops, and got home, and I had back in the day a set of phone messages, about 30 phone messages from different suppliers and different retailers saying, hey, we want to keep this going with you. What can we do to help you out? How can we help you through this bankruptcy and get restarted? And so I sold the product to a wholesaler down in Denver who gave me pennies on the dollars to get through a short financial bridge. And then I was able to buy the product back and resell it to retailers while I started to pursue my dream of producing my first book called Boulder Heart, Soul, People, and Place, which would take 3 years to produce and get launched. And this was back in 1998. As it turns out, through that hardship, paying all the vendors back, paying the government back for back taxes, getting myself back on track, paying the banks back, and then relaunching this new business, Whispering River, I found the success by building the building blocks correctly, getting an advisory board, getting people around me and support and a team that could help me through this transition, not just sitting there on my own thinking that I couldn't make it. And that first book went out, and I thought, how could this ever get financed? Amazingly enough, a printer in China got behind me, helped me produce the product. I delivered it, and the first run of books sold out in 30 days, and I was off and running again. And that was one of the most amazing moments in my life.
I think it was right after that I met you for some reason, because I remember that book clearly, and I was trying to think back on how we met, if it was through the environmental community, because I did a lot of fundraising for various environmental organizations, or if it was, through just networking and marketing. I don't recall, but I remember seeing your pictures for the first time and having my breath taken away, especially because I have a soft spot for butterflies and have a jewelry business now called Butterfly and Moon. And your butterflies that I actually just posted some on Facebook so people can see some of them. But, I think it shows not only a technical skill, but for a real sensitivity in your heart and soul for connecting to nature. And like you were saying at the earlier part of the program, how there's this oneness when we're in nature, that we feel part of the whole instead of separate and isolated. And so many times business people, I know myself, and things you've touched upon, where we struggle, we're in front of the computer, we're on the phone, we're trying to make things work. But when we can detach and get out into nature and reconnect, somehow things sort themselves out more clearly in our minds. So we're going to take a short break. We're going to come back and continue our conversation with Bob Castellino, an amazing photographer, speaker, author, consultant, about his new business called iProject Launch, what he's also doing with the Climate Reality Leadership Program, and his work with Al Gore and that movement, really, to educate people and citizens about what they can do on the local level. So stay with us. You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. We'll be right back after a short station identification and commercial break. Thank you. We'll be right back.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, a comprehensive guide of rocks, crystals, and stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Geddy Lee for RAD. To many of us, drunk driving is something that other people do. Certainly not one of our friends or relatives would do such a thing. When you see someone who's had too much to drink, about to get into a car, urge them to give up the keys and find alternate transportation. Always choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives. You should, too.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser on GGM Radio. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Alive to Thrive. My guest today from Colorado is Robert Castellino, also known as Bob. And he's actually calling in near Wolf Creek Pass, and I'm in Rocky Mountain National Park on a special location today outside of our normal studios in Missouri. And Bob's gotten involved with a climate reality leadership program and has been gone to some national training. And I wanted to bring this to the awareness of my audience and my friends because it is such an important topic that people just, A, need to know more about, and B, need to know how they can respond in a very practical, local way. So, Bob, tell us about the program you went to in Chicago earlier this summer.
Sure. Just about 4 weeks ago, I attended the Climate Reality Project Leadership Training with Al Gore, Vice President Al Gore and Maggie Fox. There are about 1,400 of us from around the world there for the training to be able to learn about his presentation that everybody saw in the movie called The Inconvenient Truth. And it's to be able to go out and open conversation and win the conversation about climate reality and the difficulty that we as people face on this planet as our climate warms and the effects it will have on us as a planet. More specifically, we were seated with people from Colorado at the Climate Reality Project, and the spirit of the project is to collaborate and to cooperate to get the message out, explain to people the scope of the problem on a global basis, how it's affecting us at our homes, in our home states and regions, and then be able to offer a number of solutions and that can help people with their health personally, their own homes, and how they can make effective changes that affect climate change, as well as in their neighborhoods and in their cities and the regions they live in, so that they have hope to get out and take action, maybe make some small changes and get started so that we can all have a positive effect on this problem that's touching every one of us.
And I do want to point out to our audience, since we do have audience all over the country and some even internationally, that there is a Facebook page, facebook.com/climatereality, that not only you can like that page, but, of course, read, you know, consistently stay informed about things like clean energy solutions. So, Bob, tell us some of the things that opened your eyes, you know, to this issue in the beginning. Was it, you know, did it grow out of your love of nature and photography and caring about the planet and seeing, you know, destruction, especially here in Colorado with the mines and everything that's been happening in that industry? But how did you wake up to this issue?
Well, it started when I was a skier, a professional ski instructor back in the 70s and 80s when I first experienced a drought here. And all of a sudden, we didn't have a ski season. Our ski season was shortened. And that was one of the first things that touched me. And then as a photographer, going through the years of significant drought at different waves, once in the 80s, then in the 90s, and then in the early 2000s, when it really started to ramp up, then I started to see the effects wherever I traveled and making photographs, whether it was reservoirs that were depleted, whether it was beetle kill pine and the trees and the landscape, whether it was fires, whether the fires were affecting people in their homes, We've seen phenomenal devastation in places like Colorado Springs and most recently Manitou Springs, where there's been flash flooding, and there's post-traumatic effects from these disasters and events, and extreme weather changes across the country. Things like Hurricane Sandy. We're seeing violent storms that are affecting us with flooding across the country. And it's changing, and we're seeing heat, which is a big problem. In Chicago in 1995, there was a number, hundreds of people who died. And what happened during those extreme events, it really affected my interest and motivation to become an activist and to get out there and to work to get to making change. And now I'm really working hard in my neighborhood and in our city. We're getting some things on the ballot. Our neighborhood has a green team. We're getting a resource nights out there. We're giving talks in schools. I'm working with the National Wildlife Federation on a number of projects, as well as different businesses such as Vitamin Cottage Natural Food Stores, giving talks to get the word out and then show people how we can make those changes. That's how it started, and that's where I'm at right now. And, the work is something that, we have to engage in every day in our own lives. It's not just something that we see from 10,000 feet up and it's happening on the news. It's something that we can do in our own lives every day.
And I think that's the important point that I want my audience to know, is that, if everyone does a little and start with baby steps, I think sometimes when people hear about things like global warming and some of these larger issues, like you said, this the higher perspective of the whole issue, they think, well, what can one person do to make a difference? And I know, for example, the spiritual community I go to, the Center for Spiritual Living in St. Louis, is going to be putting in a solar field and will be generating solar power from an empty grassy corner that we own, this huge corner lot in Creve Coeur, and it's actually going to provide some revenue and income for the center. So this is something nonprofit organizations that might need additional income, they may want to look into something like this. But what can for example, you were talking about your own neighborhood. Tell us some ideas for how someone can get started in their neighborhood.
Yeah, well, first of all, you can start right at home and getting an energy audit to find out where the leaks are in your home and learn how to plug those and start to make small changes there. Other things that affect climate change are whether we recycle, repurpose, and reuse things. Being aware of what we buy, whether it affects the landscape, whether petrochemicals are used in the foods that are being produced, being aware of labels, composting, putting less refuse back into the system and less waste, thinking about what we lay down on our lawns as far as fertilizer so that we're not just throwing down chemicals that go back into the water system. All these things really affect climate change, and water is maybe the biggest issue for us, because climate change is water. It is a lot of the big things that are happening and to us as far as these big weather events. So on a local level, that's critical. What you're doing with your church, we did with our church. We put in solar photovoltaic solar system, and it cut our energy bills by 3/4, which is a huge thing, because it's an investment, but it's also a return to the bottom line, and also you can resell the extra electricity that you produce. Learning about what you can do to collaborate in your neighborhood, getting recycling systems set up and started. Working with your neighbors, helping them understand about the issues of global warming and making a resource night so that they can find out about how to get solar installed in their own electric system, and whether it's geothermal and thermal or sun-generated electricity through photovoltaics. All these things are vital small steps around the neighborhood that can occur. And then xeriscaping, using less water on our landscape so that water can stay within the system. It's about conservation, it's about preservation, and it's about
using renewables and learning how to do that, insulating our homes, plugging our leaks, and then taking active steps in what we purchase and what we use so that we are decreasing the amount of pollution we put out that cause the increase in temperature on our planet.
Well, those are all incredible ideas. And one of the things that I noticed last night at Red Rocks, we were tailgating in the parking lot before the gates opened, and they had staff walking around collecting recyclable beer bottles, plastic, whatever. And I was amazed. And I thought that's just a simple step that every event venue could incorporate to collect. And, it's a very easy thing to do. And for an event venue the size of a Red Rocks or any other event venue, they have, you know, huge numbers of bottles that are going through that location in one occasion. So have you seen more larger businesses here in Colorado adopting? It seems like Colorado is at the forefront of this compared to the Midwest where I live. I don't see it that often. I cringe when I go to a hotel and there's any kind of event, whether it's a luncheon, a business lunch, or a black tie event, and they're not recycling. And I think as patrons of a hotel or a business establishment, as consumers, we can all, you know, write on karmic cards or call the manager or, you know, certainly use the power of social media to put messages on Facebook to say, you know, this property does recycle or this property doesn't, and why not? Why aren't they? And hold them accountable. But what are your suggestions for how a business can get started? Is there a kit or something with the Climate Reality Project that they can get some information?
Sure. At climaterealityproject.org, there's a tremendous number of resources. But one way a business can get involved, and we're creating, is a business survey so that business owners and CEOs and business managers can understand what their employees are willing to do. I mean, you look at Microsoft as an organization, they have the largest carpooling program in the world, okay? 40% of their employees are involved in carpooling, and that's because of their management. That's one very specific thing that people can do, is decrease the number of cars that are driving on the road, taking mass transit, for example. And with businesses, you know, oftentimes large warehouses produce and radiate a lot of heat off their roofs right back into the atmosphere, which contribute to global warming. And that's to take those black roofs and turn them into green roofs where they have gardens and where they're softer white roofs that absorb the heat, and they're not reflecting heat back up into the atmosphere and warming it, but they become gardens that produce vegetables, for example, that their employees tend to. It's getting a group together of concerned employees and supporting those employees so that they can set up a recycling program, maybe even go to a composting program, and talk about what they're doing systemically to decrease solid waste and how many tons that of waste that they have decreased by them being stopped going in the landfills. These things all contribute to global warming. Also, one critical piece is decreasing the amount of plastic product that we use and dispose of, because they're all tied to petrochemicals, that and that process increases global warming, and that waste is plastic waste does not recycle quickly, and its shelf life is very long. So these are very simple and important steps that businesses can take and become socially responsible in their community and in their business park to help become a leader and to demonstrate to other businesses so that they're engaged with their employees and they're touching their employees in a way that shows that they care about them. And they're engaging in an activity together outside of the product they produce or the service they deliver to really help make change, and it's critical.
And one of the things, like you mentioned, reducing plastic waste, and, you know, one of the things I had to be educated on was, you know, bottled water. It's something that is so common now that people buy bottled water. But at an event, for example, putting out pitchers of water and glasses, recyclable glasses, instead of providing bottled water. But that's been a huge educational effort to educate people on that subject. Do you find there's still a lot of a lack of information about that out there in the community about bottled water?
Yeah, well, you know, the bottled water issue is a realm unto itself. I love the Yvonne Chouinard, who owns and operates Patagonia, is a great example. They produce a product from recycled bottles, which becomes fleece, and all their fleece products are made from recycled plastic bottles from drinking water.
That's
a phenomenal example of a business taking action to help make change a problem. As far as education, absolutely. We all are too busy to go about making change, but you know, one of the things we can do personally on this bottled water issue is to carry our own bottle, whether it's stainless steel or BP3-free plastic bottle that we keep in our hands and we refill with filtered water ourselves, so that we're drinking healthy water and we're using that bottle over and over and over again. And that spills into one other thing. Instead of going out every time you eat out and you get plasticware or you get styrofoam packaging and you take that plasticware home to eat with, is to, you know, carry your own utensils with you and to make sure that you clean them. Just think about the number of times you use plastic forks and knives and just discard them or styrofoam out into the system. All these are small things that we can do, but if we do actively as individuals without, you know, having government policy put in place, we can effectively make change. And that's on a personal level and also on a business level, because you affect how business owners behave by going into a store asking them, please fill your my water bottle up with iced tea today. Please don't give me a bag when I go shopping. Please, I don't need plasticware. I've got my own with me. These simple solutions are reusing and repurposing when we're doing it individually. And it may feel a little awkward at first, but once you get into the habit, you know, your uniqueness becomes a badge of honor.
It's true. You know, it's funny. Because I lived in Colorado and I, you know, I had friends that, you know, again, like you said, they started coming into my house and they'd say, I don't want to use styrofoam plates. And they started educating me on a very simple level. And to the point that now, you know, I take the plastic forks at a party and I take them home and wash them and reuse them, or the plastic plates. And, you know, people might look at me funny, but I'm educating the 20 or 30 or 40 people that are right there at that party that I don't want to put that in a landfill somewhere. I mean, I don't know what people think about where they throw their trash away, but there was a quote, was it Brad Pitt or somebody, that there was a big educational campaign that said, there is no away. There's no place that this is going to magically disappear. And I think people put their trash out on their driveway to be picked up once a week, and they don't have to think about it anymore. They don't have to think about the barge of trash somewhere in the ocean that's trying to find a place to dump it or unload it, or the landfills that are you know, mounting huge on this planet, that we're just running out of places to put all this trash as well. It's just if once you start looking into this issue, it's really shocking. And education is, once you have that education, you have a responsibility to do something about it. You cannot look the other way once you are educated. And so it's important for everybody to just start their own educational process. I love that Bob says, you know, do an energy audit at home. So, Bob, who does someone call to get that energy audit? Do they call their local power company, or who do they call to get an energy audit?
Oftentimes, your local city governments have energy conservation projects going on, and they have resources for people who administer energy audits. And that's one way to find them. Also, folks that offer as solar panels as a business often have referrals for energy audits. I'd like to step back one more step, Brenda, about this piece you talked about. You know, this is our planet, and you can't just throw it away. We are trashing the planet. There are two small, important movies out there. One is The Story of Stuff, and you can go to thestoryofstuff.com, and the other is the Bagot movie at bagot.com. Both these movies address this very issues that we're talking about. They demonstrate what the problem is and also offer wonderful solutions on the ground that each of us can access. And finally, Brenda, I just want to point out one other thing, if you don't mind. There's this wonderful couple up in Sandpoint, Idaho, that created one of the most innovative technological advances to help America and the world solve its energy crisis. It's called SolarRoadways.com. And the idea is that our highways and roads, 28,000 square miles across the country, can become solar energy producing sources. And it's something that we use every day, and it can make them safer, more interactive, and tie us all into a grid that's healthy. And if we put solar panels on every square inch of our highways in this country, we would be producing three times the amount of energy our country uses.
That would completely change everything.
Totally. And so I'm just so enthused, and people have to just be encouraged that this problem exists out here, but there are people working with their hearts and souls to make change, and these innovations are occurring, and for some of us, not fast enough, but for others, they will be upon us in the way we live and not too far off in the distant future.
Well, and I do want to point out, thank you, Bob, very much for mentioning The Story of Stuff. They also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/storyofstuff, and they mentioned here that San Jose City Council voted just yesterday or this week to ban plastic foam takeout food containers. Those really bug me. I don't know. That's like one of my pet peeves, is those plastic foam packaging. So, again, on a very personal level, when you go to a restaurant and that's what they give you, just say no thank you. You know, you could bring your own Ziploc bags in your pocket, or you could just say, I would rather have some other, you know, recyclable container. And then in San Francisco, a great idea that they're doing is a bike share program. And that is really neat. And I saw that all over Amsterdam when I was there a few years ago. People have they bike share. People everywhere in Amsterdam bike. There's very little parking, and it's exciting to see that communities can do that. But here in the United States, there are some great examples that people can bring to their own communities. So do check that out, and SolarRoadways.com, another great resource, and everyone too can get involved with their local church group, school group, and do some road cleanup and post some signage and have a speaker come in. So, Bob, in our last few minutes here on the program, what are some of the speaking topics you cover? I know you've done some local speaking at some civic organizations and rotaries and various groups like that, but tell us, what are the topics that you're talking about to some of these local civic organizations?
In regards to global warming specifically, we're going in and talking to them about the effects of climate change on the ground here in Colorado, and pointing out, like you just have, about success stories around the country. And I just want to point out, Brenda, in Chicago in the Midwest, you have one of the most progressive cities doing many of the things that you're talking about right now. So please pay homage to those folks in Chicago. There is some change happening out there. I talk about specifically how businesses can effectively make change and become socially responsible, how they can advocate for things with their local city to make change as far as recycling, decreasing solid waste, working in concert with them to make legislative changes to make sure that bags are no longer, plastic bags are no longer used in grocery stores or any retail operation, and to promote the idea that people can carry their own bags. Those are critical things. Other people are out there on, we talk about fracking and anti-fracking issues and the health effects, and also getting legislation in place out there that can stop the gas and oil drilling right next to people's homes, where it affects our health and affects our community and extracts fossil fuels that aren't necessary, given the solutions that are available to us through passive energy collection programs. And I talk about people becoming aware, their self-awareness, that their choices themselves, how they eat, the food choices, the things they do to engage in healthy activities, walking to work, riding a bicycle to their neighborhood functions, walking to their neighbors, getting out and talking to their neighbors, becoming active in their neighborhoods are really critical. Becoming aware of the places that are beautiful that are being affected, such as our rivers, the droughts that are being caused, and what we can do by just conserving water and how we can change that. And the critical things for me is to get people inspired and passionate about being successful at what they do with their art, what they do as authors, and what they do in their businesses to make positive change to affect the planet and people and help them with their profitability. It's a real simple equation, but it's something that takes awareness and consciousness, and to help that help them see a new way is really at the heart of the message that I'm out sending to folks.
Wow. So in the last couple of minutes, what's something you're doing in the next 3 months that you would like our audience to know about? By the end of 2013, is there a project or a goal that you would like to just say that, you know, to invite people to pay attention to?
Sure. I'll point out three particular projects I'm engaged in. One is iProject Launch, where I'm helping artists and authors and small business people get started with their socially responsible business and work through the steps so that they can reach success in their dreams. The other is a project called the Colorado Digital Photography and Travel Guide, which takes people to the most beautiful places in Colorado and that they can find out how to make photographs like the pros and make their travel more efficient and more effective, and they can find it right online on Google Maps. You'll find that being posted through my website. And then finally, this whole piece about climate change and getting out. This year, I'm collaborating with a number of folks to get out and help educate and get folks to making the changes that we all need to effectively help with this problem that we're experiencing, so that we can learn to adapt and live in a new way, and that we continue enjoying this wonderful and beautiful planet that we have. This is truly a place that we should call not only home, but it is our heaven on earth.
Well, that was a great way to end, our heaven on earth. And I invite everyone to get out in nature this weekend, this Labor Day weekend. Be safe. Please leave nature the way you find it. Take your trash out with you. Please do not leave it anywhere you go. Be safe and enjoy the good life. And we're going to close with One Republic's Good Life. Thanks, Bob. Have a great time hiking out in Wolf Creek Pass area. And we'll catch up with you again soon. Would love to hear updates as your project unfolds.
Thank you, Brenda. Have a great day.
Thanks.